Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Welcome back to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Halloween day. All right. Coming up in about 45 minutes, we're going to be joined by Tim Fitzgerald. Tell all of your K-State friends. K-State is playing, who they got? Houston this week, and we still want to talk K-State football. Don't let K-State fan tell you that nobody talks about them. We talk about you guys all the time. You just like to complain all the time. We got K-State talk coming up in just a bit. We'll talk football. We'll talk a bunch of different things. But before we do that, we got to get to the business at hand. To hell with K-State football or basketball, whatever they got going on. Today's Halloween, we're talking candy on this show. So, Rob, I want you to really think about this and give me a candy that you think is underrated. And please don't mention bottle caps again, or you will be in the Joshua Briscoe. You'll be suspended. Hit me with the Rocky music. We have already nominated two candies as being underappreciated. We're not here celebrating Twix or Snickers or none of those candies. We're talking about the candies that aren't getting the necessary love and respect, that maybe aren't showing up in your Halloween baskets, but they should be. I gave you Whoppers earlier. I gave you Raisinets. This candy is what people think gummy bears are. I would argue it is one of the best gummy candies out there. Rob, you know I love them. Swedish Fish. An incredible candy. It's not flashy. Swedish Fish, they're never going to score 30 points. They're never going to be Patrick Mahomes. But you know what they can be? The Ryan Tannehill. You put them with a good run game, a good coach, and a good defense, you can maybe make a little bit of noise here. That's what Swedish Fish are. They're good. They're consistent every single time. It's not flashy. It's not going to put up big numbers. But it's a guy that you need on your team. I would love to nominate Swedish Fish in my all underrated candy basket.
Okay, so I think I get it now.
Okay, thank you.
Even though I think bottle cap should have counted, that's fine.
Thank you.
I'll try again. This is a candy I believe you like as well, so we should be back simpatico here. It's a gummy candy. It comes in a small box. You get 4 to 6 when you're going trick-or-treating. Dots.
Turn the music down.
I've seen you eat dots. Dots are good.
Rob, I've never been happier with you than I am right now. I've never been happier right now. Dots, incredibly underrated. I can't believe dots. Dots should be talked about like it's one of the greats. That's how we should discuss dots. We should talk about dots on the same level that we discuss Twizzlers, that we discuss Snickers. That's where it is. But for some reason, dots, they've been relegated to the bench. But dots, oh, when your little one dumps out their candy and they spread it out and they go towards some of the more popular treats, you can always just sneak in there and you see that yellow box looking like a golden ticket from Willy Wonka. Go ahead and grab you a couple of them dots. Your little ones won't notice because they don't appreciate it yet. Great pick by you. Great call by you. First team all underrated candy bowl dots. Yes, absolutely.
I mean,
you're preaching here. You're preaching. You're on fire now.
That it's a great value candy too.
100%.
You open, you know, a Twix. You get 2 bites of Twix. You know what I get with dots? I get a green, I get a yellow, I get a red, I get an orange, I get that pink one. I mean, oh boy.
That green one's kind of bad, though. I ain't gonna lie to you.
I mean, there's a hierarchy.
Yeah, not a green one. The green one leaves a little bit to be desired. The green one's just okay. You know what, though, about dots? I will say this, too. I love the fact that dots, I'm only getting a bite size. I'm not getting a big box of dots. That's too many. There's too many. You got to know Dot's position. You can't give Dot's 300 ABs. Nah, you got to give Dot's 100. Dot's or Paul DeJong can come in, hit for a little bit of power, but you can't let Dot's play every day. Absolutely. No, I'm with you. Dot's 100%. Thank you, Rob. We appreciate that. Thank you for that contribution. You really redeemed yourself. You honestly redeemed yourself from the bottle caps. The bottle caps was a fumble. That was a pick six the other direction. It was bad. But you really outdid yourself with Dot's. All right, Rob, let's get back to serious football things. Let's get to some of the top storylines on Sunday in the NFL.
Carrington, let's start Sunday storylines with what could be a big change in the NFL type of game. Noon, it is Broncos and Ravens from Baltimore. Despite every national talking head speaking highly of the Ravens, both of these teams are 5-3. Carrington, I'm not saying the Broncos are great. I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl team, but does a win on Sunday over the Ravens change the national perception around the Broncos from ho-hum beating up on a bad schedule to, oh, there's something to contend with in the AFC?
I mean, these next 3 weeks, I would say, do that for the Denver Broncos. They play the Ravens on Sunday, they play the Chiefs next Sunday, and then they play the Atlanta Falcons. So you are playing three teams that I believe are going to win their division, three playoff teams, three teams that are very balanced offensively and defenses, three teams of great quarterbacks. So we are going to learn everything we need to know about the Broncos over the course of the next 3 weeks. I mean, the Broncos win so far. They beat Tampa Bay earlier, and that has really propped this team. They beat them on the road when Tampa Bay was fully healthy. Since then, they have beat the Jets, Raiders, Saints, with Spencer Rattler at quarterback, and they beat up on the Carolina Panthers. All right, it's one thing to do that to those teams. Go do that to Baltimore. Go do that on the road against Kansas City. Go do that at home against the Atlanta Falcons. So the Broncos are one of those teams that have gotten off to a good start. They are 5-3, but their schedule and the intensity is about to ratchet up here in this second half.
Staying in the AFC, maybe the biggest storyline of the week in the National Football League is the Indianapolis Colts, but for all the reasons you don't want to be a storyline, they are benching their quarterback, and Joe Flacco is in this week. Carrington, the Colts are 500 and very alive in the AFC playoff picture because they are 500. Does Joe Flacco make them a playoff team, or is this just grasping at straws because they are about to flame out hard without a quarterback?
They're definitely a better team, I would say, with Joe Flacco than they are with Anthony Richardson. You got this stretch coming up here in the month of November. They have on the road against Minnesota, home against Buffalo, on the road on Sunday Night Football against the Jets. Would have to think that that game gets flexed out. I certainly hope that it does. I'm tired of watching the Jets in nationally televised games. And then they got the Lions coming up to end November. So this is a big week for the Indianapolis Colts. I do think that Joe Flacco gives you a fighting chance in those games. I would probably say that the Colts are on the outside looking in. I don't think they're a playoff team, but you certainly have a shot with Flacco that I don't think you had with Richardson.
Let's pivot across the conference to the NFC. Honestly, game of the weekend. Lions, Packers, 325, Fox at Lambeau Field. Carrington, every battle in the NFC North is appointment television. This game is no different. Do the Lions continue their march to being the best team in the NFC, or does a potentially healthy Jordan Love, I saw he practiced today, change things and it's go Pack go?
Something always wrong with Jordan Love. It's the second time he's been hurt this year, ain't it? What's going on with Jordan Love?
He's
what was
hurt
he doing in
the
offseason, man? You got to stretch out. Get more limber, Jordan Love. All right, back to the topic. I know the Chiefs are the best team in the league. I'm not questioning that. I know they're the best team in the league. The Lions, I think, have maybe played – the Lions have shown a higher ceiling, I think, than any other team in the National Football League. I really like this Lions team. I think there's a lot of reasons to like them. They are certainly the favorites in the NFC if you want to remove them from the conversation of Kansas City. This is a big stretch for them as well. On the road against Green Bay, you just mentioned that. They also play Houston on the road next weekend on Sunday Night Football. So we will have two big spots for the Detroit Lions. They are the favorite here. My question with the Lions, are they going to be a team that makes a pass rush move to try to make up for the loss of Aiden Hutchinson? Aiden Hutchinson was on the short shortlist for Defensive Player of the Year before he went out with the injury. Is his injury enough to derail this team, or are they going to potentially make a move to try to go get some pass rush? That's a team that honestly maybe should have been in on trying to get Joshua Uche, especially because you could have got him for so cheap. They didn't get him. Kansas City got him, but that's going to be the thing to watch with this Lions team.
Carrington, our final question from Sunday. Do you believe we could see an upset? It is noon. It is the Cowboys, an under 500 Cowboys team on the road, but kind of sort of a home game against the Atlanta Falcons in 5-3. Do the Cowboys pull the upset, or is suddenly Mike McCarthy's seat super hot at 3-5?
Yeah, I'm not doing this. I mean, when you look at the teams that the Atlanta Falcons have lost to, they lost to Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and Seattle. Three teams that are in the postseason. Dallas is not on the same caliber or level of either one of those teams. Where would you say that the Cowboys are better than the Atlanta Falcons? Maybe you argue their quarterback. He's certainly not playing better than what Kirk Cousins is. They're not a better rushing team. They don't have more weapons than them. I'm not sure if they have a better defense. Atlanta is the better team. They're at home, and you're telling me it's a coin flip game? Yeah, take the Falcons here. I'm surprised that the number is this close. Coming up on the other side, let's talk about the Chiefs' left tackle situation. We looked up some numbers here that I think explain why the Chiefs are having some struggles at left tackle in comparison to some of the other teams in the league. I'll explain more. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
All right, let's talk about the Chiefs' left tackle situation. I know some of you would like to see the Chiefs go out and make some moves at left tackle. They had an opportunity to go get Cam Robinson, but they made a decision not to go out and get him. When you see the finances attached to Cam Robinson, it certainly made sense why the Chiefs were not a team that were very interested in improving in the left tackle position. Here is Andy Reid earlier today talking about the left tackle position and if they were going to make a change.
Yeah, we'll see. We feel both of them can be starters. So we're just right now it's going to say stay Wanye. But I mean, we're lucky to have two guys that are young and growing and that are going to be good Chiefs.
So that was Andy Reid earlier today. He said that the Chiefs are planning on sticking with Wanye Moore. Certainly understandable. So I looked this up earlier today because I was curious. So, Wanye Morris has made 9 NFL starts. Monday Night Football will be his 10th start of his career. So, I wanted to go through and just give you guys a comparison of what other playoff teams look like at left tackle and how it's going to take a little bit of time and a little bit of patience in developing, whether it's Wanye Morris or Kingsley Suamataia, it's just simply going to take you a little bit of time. So the Baltimore Ravens, their left tackle is Ronnie Stanley. He has made 95 starts in his NFL career. Deion Dawkins, he's the left tackle for the Buffalo Bills. He has made 114 starts in his NFL career. Dan Moore Jr., he is the Steelers' left tackle. He has made 57 starts. Laremy Tunsil for the Texans, 116 starts. The Broncos would be in the playoffs right now. Garrett Bowles is their left tackle. He has made 107 starts in his NFL career. And the Chargers have Rashawn Slater. He has made 42 starts in his NFL career. So added all that up, we took the average. So far, out of the other six teams that would make the postseason, their left tackle has started an average of 88 games. Your left tackle has made 9 starts. Now, I'm not saying that Wanye Morris turns into Ronnie Stanley, or he is the prospect that Rashawn Slater was, or he has a career the way that Garrett Bowles has. That remains to be seen. But what I am telling you is Kingsley Suamataia got 2 starts, and they replaced him. Wanye Morris doesn't have double-digit starts attached to his name yet. It's just going to take a little bit of time. that we have all decided, I say a majority of us, maybe go back, a lot of us have decided that we are going to give Xavier Worthy some time. Xavier Worthy has made 7 starts in his career. Wanya Morris, even though he has a full year in the league, he is not that far ahead of him in terms of usage and play on the field. So it's just going to take a little bit of time. I think if you were honest with yourself, you knew at the beginning of the season where they were potentially a little bit weak. They had some experience at wide receiver. They had some experience at corner. Maybe they didn't have a lot of proven production at corner, but they definitely had experience. Jalen Watson's been in the league. Trent McDuffie's been in the league. They had guys who have started and played at a high level. They don't have that at left tackle. You hope that they get that as the season progresses, and once Wanya gets to start 13, 14, and this team starts to play in more important games, you hope that the production on the field improves, but we're still talking about 2 guys that are still very early on in their career. So I just wanted to give you guys the numbers. Out of the other 6 potential playoff teams, their left tackle has made an average of 88 starts, and Wanya Morris will make his 10th start on Monday Night Football. It is just going to take some time. Maybe Wanya Morris ends up being a bust and they replace him with Kingsley. Maybe Kingsley doesn't work out and they got him going a different direction. But it is just one of those things that we are going to have to wait. It's that simple. We're going to have to wait to see how those 2 guys play and are they turning the corner, you would hope, as we get closer to the postseason. Because right now, I would say that the Chiefs, outside of injuries, don't have a lot of Achilles heels. There's not a lot of places on the team that you think you could potentially get burned on later in the year. Left tackle is one of those things. They are below average at left tackle. And it's not just from an on-the-field part. It's also experience. Your guys just don't have a lot of reps. Your guys are going to have to kind of learn trial by fire and getting live rounds and getting live bullets and playing in these games as the games get more important. They got a game coming up against Buffalo in a couple weeks. They go up against a pretty capable defense in the Denver Broncos. You play Houston later on this year. You play some teams that got some pass rushers, got a capable offense, got a good defense. You still continue to play good teams. We just got to see what Wanya looks like in a month and a half from now, and then I think we can fairly evaluate where he is.
I agree with all that. I don't think inexperienced left tackle is like a nail in the Chiefs' coffin, but are you surprised by this? Because at every turn, basically since that 2020 Super Bowl, since the COVID Super Bowl against the Bucks, where the Chiefs' patchwork offensive line was humiliated by the Bucks, Brett Veach and co. have put a ton of resources into keeping Patrick Mahomes upright. That has been their go-to move. You could argue one of the reasons they're lacking at wideout is because they have done everything they can at offensive line. They signed Joe Tooney to a left tackle contract to play left guard. They spent a premium pick on center with Creed Humphrey. They then paid Creed Humphrey. They traded for Orlando Brown Jr. They didn't keep him. They then paid a massive contract to Jawan Taylor. Like, it might not be in Kansas City, but Trey Smith's going to get a massive deal somewhere. There are other moves they've made along the offensive line that you can point to go, oh, they have always said keep Patrick upright. And that Jawan Taylor move was like the first day of free agency. Like, yeah. Free agency had just started, and boom, Jawan Taylor. Are you surprised that a team that has done everything to keep Patrick clean, so to speak, is running with such inexperience at left tackle, which most people would say is the most premium offensive line position?
I would say no, just because I think they've invested in the position. Now, given where they select, you were never going to get Rashawn Slater, who was picked near the top half of the draft. You were never going to get a Joe Alt type. You pick in the late 30s, 32nd. You were never going to get the best offensive line prospect that's out there. But they have had a lot of success from offensive linemen from Oklahoma. That's where Wanya is. And they spent a second round pick on the position. So they have taken swings at the position. I mean, you usually are not expecting your third round left tackle to come in here and be a Pro Bowler from day one. That's just not usually what you're expecting at that position. You think you know it's going to take some time and some development has to happen. We're just seeing that development happen in real time. This is what I think happened with the Chiefs at left tackle. I think they decided pretty early on that Kingsley was going to be their left tackle. And just given how practice is now in the National Football League, there's no way for you to get that guy ready by giving him live rounds.
That's just not really how the offseason portion is anymore in the National Football League. That's not what mini camps are. That's not what OTAs are. It's just not fast-paced and physical in that way. And then you got to training camp, and you kind of were just trying to get him caught up to speed, and you were giving him all the first-team reps, and you were thinking, hey, we're just going to throw him in there, trial by fire. And he got burned in those first couple of games. And I think we saw their left tackle competition. We just saw it play out in the regular season and not behind closed doors and not in training camp. They didn't really give Wanye an opportunity in training camp to run with the ones. And I think that's really important. Wanye wasn't their left tackle until he was their left tackle. He wasn't their left tackle for OTAs. He wasn't their left tackle for mini camps. He wasn't their left tackle at any point in the offseason period. He wasn't getting first team reps in week one or week two with this team. He didn't start getting reps with the ones until week three of the NFL season. We're heading into week nine. So he's kind of playing catch up in a lot of ways. So that's why I say with Wanye, I'm willing to be patient to see where he's at in 6 weeks. Let's see where he's at in 6 weeks. Let's see where he is when we get close to him having a full regular season of action behind him, because if we are looking at game started and reps, we are halfway through one season of you playing in the NFL when Ronnie Stanley has made 95 starts and Deion Dawkins has made 114 starts. You just don't know, or your left tackle just doesn't have the experience the way that a lot of these other, quote, contending teams do at that position.
I also think, and I know this is a very popular take, I'm not breaking ground with this one, I think the fact that they are working Wanye in real time and getting those live bullets, those live reps they didn't get at training camp, they didn't get in the preseason, is affecting the passing game. And we talk a lot on this show about if it's the weapons or if it's Mahomes. There is a clear trust issue Mahomes has with his tackles. The ball is getting out of his hands faster than ever. Like, it is boom out of his hands, which is not per se a great thing right now for this offense. You can see a couple times, even the offensive line is holding up okay, he gets a little jittery back there in the pocket. He gets a little bit of happy feet. I think them trying to learn on the fly or have that preseason battle on the fly is one of the reasons why the offense right now is a little bit stuck in the mud. Wanye's been better than Kingsley, but for a team that gloats and boasts they have the toughest, most difficult, arduous training camp in all the NFL, it's more physical, that Andy's old school that way, the fact that through that whole process and the preseason, they couldn't find their left tackle and they're trying to figure out in the regular season is one of the reasons their regular season offense is behind the curve compared to their contemporaries.
So today what we have been doing to celebrate Halloween is we have been giving you guys some underrated Halloween candies. We're not talking about the Snickers today or the Twix or the Reese's peanut butter cups. Everybody loves those candies. We are celebrating the candies that have held you down for generations. You've passed them to your little ones. Maybe your little ones overlook it because they like the Warheads or they like other candies. But we're trying to highlight the candies that have shown excellence in the face of adversity. They have been forgotten. They have been left behind. They're not the number one overall pick, but every time you take a bite, you know what? They're just reliable. They're solid. They're consistent. That's what we're celebrating on the drive today. I've got my next candy, Rob. Hit me! This is a favorite of mine. I usually would knock a candy like this and I would laugh and mock it and call it bank candy. But you know what? This is no secondary candy. This is a starter. With its very unique blend of excellent milk chocolate and peanuts, it doesn't get the respect that it deserves. The candy I'm talking about is a Mr. Good Bar. Mr. Good Bar, when you get the little bite size and they come in that three-piece, you get a little crackle, you get a little crunch, and you get that Mr. Good Bar coming off the bench. Oh my goodness, it's exactly what you need. Again, not flashy. It's your backup point guard. You're going to go grab the Snickers first. You're going to grab the Twix, but Mr. Good Bar is just sitting there. It's ready to... Coach, sub me in, sub me in. He comes in, knocks a couple of threes down, gets a steal. He energizes the run. He gets the crowd fired up and pumped up, and he goes back to the bench. We appreciate those candies on this show. Those candies get celebrated on this show. Mr. Goodbar, all underrated.
We can pay with the chocolate or chocolate idea type candies. Payday. Payday is criminally underrated. Now, is it the best candy? Is it the best peanut candy? No. Obviously, you would never choose a Payday over a Snickers. That's lunatic behavior. But when you're opening that bag of candy and you see a Payday, you're not upset. It is a solid role player. I'm talking, you made the comparison earlier. We're trying to find Travis Relaford's. That's what a Payday is. It's not going to go out there and get you 20 and 10, but that's what you have Thomas Robinson for. That's what you have LeBron James for. We know what LeBron needs? He needs a shooter in the corner. He needs Mike Miller. A Payday is Mike Miller. There's a role for this candy. It's never in the limelight, but when you eat it, you're happy. Payday is a criminally underrated candy.
Someone on the text line says, C-Dot, what do you think about old school double bubble? I don't want to break my teeth. That double bubble is cement hard, is what it is. It's bad. This is the problem with double bubble. It's got two problems, honestly. Number one, it's hard. I mean, like a rock. That's number one. Number two, it loses flavor in two or three bites. You take two chomps. By the time you're done, all the sugar is gone. And now it's like you're chewing notebook paper. No, double bubble is not underrated. In fact, double bubble is properly rated. You give it to kids on Halloween. Imagine right now that you were in an airplane and the person next to you was chewing gum. And you looked over and you said, hey, can I have some? Oh, yeah, sure, of course. And that person then dug in their pocket. And then when they opened their hand up, it was two regular double bubbles. No, no, thanks. I'm all right. I'm fine. I can't do it. Double bubble will not get its own segment on this show. It will not be celebrated on this show. It doesn't deserve to be celebrated because it's not good. It's not a starting candy. You know what? If I could throw your piece of gum at a window and the window would break, I don't need to be putting that in my body. I don't. I'm telling you, it's like chewing pebbles. No. And I ain't talking about Flintstone vitamins. It's like chewing pebbles. It's terrible. No, thank you. Are you a double bubble guy? Please don't.
No.
Okay.
The only time I've ever enjoyed it.
My brother,
bubble.
I was getting scared, man.
Remember, maybe this is like when I was playing baseball as a kid. You would go get a double bubble for like 50 cents, and then you'd chew it, and then you'd spit it out in the outfield because it lasted its whole lifespan was the jog from the dugout to right field.
And honestly, yeah, I was going to say, it wouldn't even last the inning.
It was the, my parents don't want to splurge on me getting big league chews, so have a double bubble.
Okay, I just wasn't sure, man. I'm just here to suggest. Somebody said double bubble is a candy that Drew would like. Let's not do my man Drew like that, all right? Let's not do my guy like that. I know we ain't on the same team like that, but you know what, man? Let's calm down on my guy Drew there. I don't like the direction this is headed towards my guy Drew. I really don't like it. All right, Rob, let's get back to Thursday night football tonight between the Texans and the Jets. Are you a Texans believer? I ask that question because I think it is safe to say Kansas City is in its own category, right? When you've won 22 of your last 28 games, when you won back-to-back Super Bowls, you are in your own class. You got your own table. You don't got to share your table, don't got to share your bottle with anybody else in the club. That's your section. I would then say that there are probably three or four teams in that next tier. I would put Buffalo in that conversation. I'd put Baltimore in that conversation. I'd put the Lions in that conversation. That might be it in terms of those second tier teams in the National Football League. Do you think Houston deserves to be in the conversation with those three teams? Or do you think that Houston is maybe in that rung right below it? That you would maybe put them with the Vikings or the Commanders or one of those kind of teams? Or do you think that Houston deserves to be in the conversation with the Bills, Ravens, and the Lions?
I have them a ring down, which is maybe unfair by me to have them in that rung down, but because like the Commanders and that group, I've never seen them in the postseason. But the Texans played two postseason games last year. They won one game. They beat Joe Flacco's Cleveland Browns at home. It's a story I've seen before. Hey, the plucky AFC South team, they win a division, they get a home game. Hey, they won the home game. Oh, let's see what happens now. Nothing happens now. Matt Schaub was doing this with the Texans, winning a home playoff game against the Andy Dalton Bengals. Then they'd graduate up and lose. So I unfairly, probably for their track record, have them stuck in ring two with the Commanders in that group. I just need to see actual postseason success. Graduating out a wild card weekend and then losing in the next round. And by the way, getting beat pretty handily by the Baltimore Ravens, yeah, albeit a different team this year. I'm not ready to put you up in that contender category, especially now the moves you made in the offseason that were designed to bump you up the level.
Those guys are hurt now.
The guys are hurt now. Yeah. I mean, so that it's very same team feel. I have the utmost respect for DeMeco Ryans. I think he can move a ring up, but I got to see it first. Kind of like how Josh Allen lost the Texans in the playoffs, and people were like, oh, is he next? I need to see it first before I'm saying he's next.
This is a really intriguing stretch for the Houston Texans. They go on the road and they play the Jets tonight, and next week they play the Lions on Sunday Night Football. So that's a big-time game, right? Big-time game between the Texans and the Lions, and I think the Texans can start the conversation. If you can come out of this stretch, you got a coin flip game today against the Jets. You are not favored in this game. You're a little bit banged up right now, but you'll get the mini bye. You'll get some extended rest going into, I mean, this is probably your second hardest game of the year behind on the road against Kansas City. Maybe you could argue they went on the road and played Green Bay. They also played Buffalo earlier, so two difficult games, but Houston, for the most part, has lived up to the expectation of what people thought they were going to be in the early part of the season. They're 6-2 right now, so they certainly deserve a lot of credit. But these next 10 days are going to tell us a lot about the Houston Texans, given the quality of opponents that they are going up against and the spot that they are in today on Thursday Night Football. All right, K-State fans, coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Tim Fitzgerald. Let's learn a little bit more about the football team as we are heading into November, and K-State is still one of the teams that has a chance to make the college football playoff. We'll catch up with Tim Fitzgerald next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 5 minutes breaking down the state of college football. It's time for Take 5 with The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
Let's head to Manhattan, Kansas, to be joined by Tim Fitzgerald. He is with Go Power Cat. There's only one local team that has lived up to the expectations this year, and it is the K-State Wildcats. Tim, how you doing, my man?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Tim, we have seen a lot of growth from Avery Johnson from game one to now. Where have you seen the greatest, I guess, room for growth in his game over the course of the last 2 months or so?
Boy, I tell you what, you can go back to the start of the season and see how really uncomfortable, but just not quite able to pass from a pocket. He'd never really done that. He's always passed on the move or once in a while pass the pocket, but not stand there and trust his line and do all those things, move around inside the pocket before escaping. Boy, over the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, he's really learned how to do that. You go back a week ago at West Virginia, he was unable to run the ball. West Virginia did a great job stopping the running game because it was less dangerous with Avery off the table, and instead he threw for almost 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. So that is a huge sign of progress, and we still haven't seen him play his complete game. Pretty close to Colorado, but he still is a little bit dinged up from Colorado. We didn't see him run much last week. I don't think we'll see a ton of that at Houston because then that gets him into an off week to heal up. And I think after that, we're really going to see him take his game to another level.
Tim, I love it when a plan comes together. I thought that this team could be one of the better rushing teams in the Big 12, just given all of the weapons. Giddens is one of the best backs in the country. I actually think he's a little bit underrated nationally. You look at Avery Johnson and his rush ability, and Dylan Edwards, every time he's got the ball, he's been pretty explosive for this team. This is the same K-State team that I feel like I've seen my whole life. They are well coached. They can run the football. They play just enough defense, and they can beat just about anybody in the conference.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I don't know if you could have hired a better person to replace Bill Snyder than what Chris Klieman's done. It could be because they go about the game of football in very similar ways. Now, how they get there with their coaching and handling of players might be different. Recruiting might be different. But the actual construction of the program and what they want to do on game day is so similar. Very traditional values as a coach in terms of running the ball first and stopping the run, and he executes those things. He develops players at an extremely high level, which you have to do if you're at a Kansas State or a Kansas or an Iowa State. You've got to be a developmental program.
Right now we're talking to Tim Fitzgerald, learning a little bit more about the Wildcats as they head into their final month of the regular season. They've got a road game against Houston, Arizona State, Cincinnati. Both of those games are at home, and they go on the road to play Iowa State. Now, Tim, I don't mean to put any pressure on the Wildcats, but there is absolutely no reason for this team not to be 10-1 heading to Ames coming up in 3 weeks.
I agree, but we also have to recognize that those Arizona State and Cincinnati games look a little bit different now that we're actually playing football and see that they're pretty good teams. And what's really interesting is how the Big 12's boiled out and been so wild has been to the detriment of Kansas State's schedule, because they're running the gauntlet in this conference. Aside from those two games that we thought would be easy W's and aren't, they're playing Colorado, BYU, and Iowa State all on the road. And those three teams only play K-State among that group of four. So they're going up against every test possible in this version of the Big 12. And if they can win out, it'll be quite a compliment.
Tim, this is how I would rank the Big 12. I think that BYU is the best team. I actually think K-State's better than Iowa State. So I'd have K-State second, Iowa State third, Colorado fourth. How do you look at the top half of the Big 12?
I wouldn't disagree with that, but I would probably still put Iowa State there until they prove otherwise. But you can also look at their schedule and say, well, they've avoided a lot of trouble this season, including playing Kansas coming up here pretty soon. That, hey, who would have thought that Kansas would be in the situation they are? But I'm telling you what, that KU team was good last Saturday, and they were good the Saturday before. So maybe they found something. If they clean up the turnovers, they're going to be good. Maybe Iowa State won't have an easy road to being undefeated after 11 games, but that doesn't really matter for K-State. They've got a loss in the conference, so they need to go win that game no matter what. And, they need to win out. That's probably their only path to be safe with, unless they get a lot of help to get to the Big 12 championship game, and they're capable of that.
Tim, how are they going to do this thing? So I guess let's play this out. Let's say that BYU goes undefeated in Big 12 play. And let's say that Iowa State, K-State, and Colorado all have a loss in the league. How are we going to figure out what team plays BYU for the Big 12 championship?
Well, K-State would have the tiebreaker because they would have beaten both the other teams in that situation. Now, what really becomes curious to me, Carrington, is let's say all four of those teams went out until K-State plays Iowa State. And, it doesn't even matter what happens with K-State. The loser of the game will be sitting there. If it's Iowa State 11-1, they're not playing in the conference title. Their record's set. And you got Colorado over there at 10-2. That, I got to be honest, the team I saw when K-State played out there was a really good football team. They are turning the corner. And it's going to be interesting, the committee, what they're going to do with the Big 12. A champion will go. What if K-State wins? And now BYU's 12-1. I mean, they're going to have some teams that's going to be awfully hard to just eliminate, but I know it'll happen.
Yeah, I think the question, and Rob and I have been debating it on the show, is how many teams do you think that the Big 12 and ACC get? At the beginning of the season, I thought it was going to be three teams, and one league was going to get two, and then the other league was just going to get its winner. But, I mean, out of that grouping you're talking about, you're going to end up leaving a BYU out of it, maybe Clemson out of it, maybe Miami out of it, that maybe it's going to be two teams in the Big 12 and two teams in the ACC that end up making it. That means somebody from the Big Ten, maybe in Indiana, or somebody from the SEC is going to be left out in the cold.
Look, I'm going to be blunt here. Don't tell me that the Big 12 is a weak league when Indiana suddenly can go from downtrodden to contender in the Big 10. You don't make a jump that would essentially mean if you're competing for the championship of the Big 10, you're a national title contender. I don't buy that. I simply don't buy that they can go from being really bad to a national title contender in 1 year. I'm just saying maybe the middle, upper middle of the Big Ten isn't as good as people want to think it is, and it's pretty comparable to the Big 12.
Tim, I do have to ask you one basketball question. I don't think a lot of people, their brain is sort of shifted over to that part of the college schedule, but college basketball starts on Monday. Like, we're going to see Monday Night Football with the Chiefs, and it's going to be Baylor against Gonzaga on the same night. How do you feel about K-State heading into the season? I know they missed the tournament last year. They had a great transfer portal, a great recruiting class. This feels like this is a bounce-back year for the Wildcats.
It does. Two interesting things is Jerome Tang noted that, his first team, they didn't have all their players until October because Desi Sills came so late and did the short semester to be eligible. Last year, they didn't get them till mid to late August. The classes had started when they added their final pieces. Everyone on this roster was here in June. So these guys have been playing together all summer, bonding together as a team, and he feels like they're way ahead of his first two teams. But also, he feels like the depth on this team will guard against some of the things that happened last year. You had an unexpected situation with a player. Let's not get into that. An unexpected injury from another transfer you were counting on. And you really didn't have the troops to back you up. Now they do. They feel like all 13 guys on this scholarship roster can go ahead and play for them.
Tim, last question here. We've been kind of highlighting some underrated candies here. What's that candy for you? Not like a Snickers or a Twix. Those are very popular candies. Something like a Werther's Original or Peppermint. Give me your underrated candy.
I feel profiled that you picked the old BP for me. I'm going to go with a shocking decision, but one I will buy about once or twice a year when I'm in a convenience store, a Zero Bar. I love them.
That is Tim Fitzgerald with Go Power Cat talking about the K-State Wildcats. Tim, I want you to know that I have jumped off the Missouri bandwagon. They have let me down too many times this year, and I have fully come over to the K-State Wildcats. I'm pulling for you guys to make the Big 12 championship and make the college football. So be sure you tell all your Wildcat supporters that information.
I will, and I'll be glad to be on anytime you want. But I got to tell you, what we've seen in football this year, we thought the NIL and the portal would make the rich richer. Nada. It has evened out the tables, and a lot of talent has been spread more evenly across college football, and it's a blast to cover.
Absolutely. That is Tim Fitzgerald joining us on the show. Tim, man, I appreciate your time. Thanks for hopping on today.
Thank you.
Absolutely. That is Tim Fitzgerald with Go Power Cat joining us. K-State, they still got a chance to make the college football playoff and compete for the national championship. All right, coming up on the other side, let's get back to Halloween. Rolling Stone released the 25 best Halloween songs. We'll go through them. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.